Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Hank. So I wonder if today people will think that this is a subject that we all struggle with, or if it's something that's the other people and not me kind of conversation. I'm curious to find out.
I think there's a struggle, various levels of struggle amongst all of us.
That's true. And I think when it comes to the topic of infidelity, everyone in some way in their life has been touched by it, whether directly or through a friend or family. Or, you know, I think it's one of those things that impacts our lives in some way. So I guess I already gave away the topic today. But yes, we're going to talk about infidelity. And I'm a little nervous. I was madly writing notes as you started talking because there's so many directions we can go with this topic. It's not simple. It's very complicated. It's very sensitive. There is a lot that goes into the conversation about infidelity and cheating. And so I want to make sure that I give it a broad enough amount of information so that it doesn't become just a one-sided, we hate all people who cheat, or one-sided to, an affair is important for, you know, sustaining your happiness. I mean, I think there's so much nuanced information that I hope we'll get to have a long conversation about it today. But so before you run out the door, what do you think about the word infidelity? When you hear about infidelity, what's the first thought you have?
Well, I mean, the first thought I would have would be cheating on a committed relationship, cheating on your marriage. But when I said there's different levels of it, I mean, I think some people might think if an attractive person walks by you in the shopping mall and you give them a second look, that might be some level of cheating on your spouse. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but having sex with somebody you're not married to and you're married, that's I consider that very wrong and very infidelity.
So is it a deal breaker? Is that an end of marriage issue?
I think that's up to debate.
Yeah. Well, good. Then it's a good conversation to have. And I think each relationship is so different when it comes to cheating and infidelity and sexuality. I mean, it's a lot. So today we're going to take that on in some level. And you're going to be invited to join the conversation shortly, as always, 805-781-3875. You can be part of the conversation by calling in, but you can also send us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or join our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can check out our website, TheReluctantTherapist.com, and you can listen to previous shows there in our archives or by visiting kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. We are a conversation with a reluctant therapist, so you can keep up with the shows. And I'm excited because we also, with my intern, Ashlyn, are working to make the shows available through podcasts, so we'll have more information about that. And we are tweeting, although for week number two, I forgot to tweet again, so I might have to put that on Ashlyn's to-do list, because I do, if you are a tweeter, I would like to make that available, and it's @EBTRT. So today, what inspired the show Why Now, Why at This Time was the very well-publicized hacking of the infidelity website Ashley Madison. And if you're not familiar with it, it's the largest dating site for married people. They call themselves the largest dating site for intimate or discreet relationships. It's basically, it's advertised as a leading married dating service for discreet encounters. And their tagline is Ashley Madison, life is short, have an affair. So this website had a hack of their personal information, and the group that hacked in threatened to start releasing the personal information of people who are part of this website. Okay. So you can imagine that if you are a member of Ashley Madison and you are using this website to solicit relationships with other people and you're married, that this is a very anxiety-provoking experience. But it also is an opportunity to have a conversation or to look more deeply into what's going on in your committed relationship that would cause you to want to visit a website like Ashley Madison. So in light of this hacking and reading a lot of articles from different therapists who are chiming in about affairs and relationships and about marriages and looking at what the website said themselves to kind of defend what they're doing as a website, I thought we need to talk about this because infidelity itself has been around since marriage began. And I think we'll focus today because I think the difficult thing is that it can be such a large conversation that we might have a hard time focusing in on kind of the issue. So let's look at infidelity when it comes to marriage or to committed relationships of some kind. So not, you know, casual dating, cheating, but when it comes to a committed relationship, whether you're living together or you're married, and especially if you're married, because it comes with a covenant or a contract when you marry someone that isn't necessarily there if you're living with someone or in a committed relationship without the marital piece. So I kind of want to focus in on how infidelity impacts marriage because of that vow or that contract you make when you marry someone else. So let's just say that infidelity has been around since the beginning of marriage. The two kind of have gone hand in hand. And it's interesting because infidelity, although it is considered universally forbidden by every marriage covenant, it is also universally practiced. And it's been practiced in every society. And interestingly enough, if you look at the history of marriage throughout time, you know, for the vast amount of time, the marital contract was more of an economic contract. And loving your spouse was really not part of the marital contract. It was more about combining, you know, two estates or two families or two forms of wealth. And that people had their love relationship, their sexual relationship with a concert, right? So, someone outside of their marriage. That was the common form. And that if you actually loved your spouse in the 16th and 17th century, you were considered suspect. You know, what is wrong with this person that they love their spouse? It wasn't part of the marital contract. So infidelity in early marital times was more a threat to the economic security of the relationship. And that's really kind of continued on for a while into the 20th century even. But in the last 30, 40 years, especially, but you know, the last 100 years, we've shifted how we view marriage. But really in the last 30, 40 years, why we marry or what people are looking for in marriage has shifted away from strictly kind of economic partnership to being an emotional partnership, that we have put our emotional well-being and lives into our marriages. And so an affair now becomes much more of not just a threat to our economic stability, but a threat to our emotional security and our emotional well-being. And so how adultery is viewed in marriages has shifted along with how we've shifted what we look for in our marital relationships. So on that note alone, we see a different way of approaching infidelity from a therapist's point of view with couples, because although it is one of the primary things that brings couples into counseling, how it impacts the relationship has shifted in ways. So we need to talk about that. But it's interesting because one of the first things people want to talk about when it comes to infidelity is how many people actually cheat, you know, and who is cheating and why is this happening all over? You know, some people believe that every person is a potential cheater in some way, but it's hard to actually get a statistic down of the actual amount of people who cheat in their relationships because the definition of infidelity is so broad. We all have different levels of what we would consider to be cheating. As Hank said, you know, some people might think that cheating is looking at an attractive person with longing in your eyes. You know, the range of what is considered infidelity could be sexting, watching porn, trolling dating apps, getting happy ended massages, having a sexual relationship with someone, or having a deep friendship. You know, because of this wide range of definitions of what it is to be unfaithful, the statistics range between 26 and 75% of all people in a committed relationship have cheated in some way, again, depending on their definition. So because of the numbers of people who cheat or have been cheated on or whose lives have been affected about it, I think this conversation is really important to have, mainly because the primary element of infidelity is around the secrecy. That the primary element of what is an infidelity is a secretive relationship of some kind, whether it's sexting or watching porn or an actual sexual affair. You've had a secretive encounter with someone that's outside of your marriage. And because secrets are the primary cause of what makes us mentally and emotionally ill when it comes to our relationships, then talking about these secretive relationships, talking about the pain that comes with finding out that something has happened in your marriage that you didn't know about, is one way we can start to maybe broaden or strengthen our marital relationships. The other two elements of what is considered an infidelity are an emotional connection and sexual alchemy. And it's interesting because I was listening to Esther Perel talk about affairs, and she's considered one of the leading experts on infidelity and relationships and marriages and how they survive or don't survive after an affair. And she said that the three elements, the secretive relationship, an emotional connection, and sexual alchemy. The sexual alchemy is interesting because quite often it's the imagination of what's going to happen in the secretive relationship is much more enticing than what the sex itself. That's quite often for most people, the imagination of that secret rendezvous or that secret passionate kiss, or, you know, the imagination of what that's going to be actually becomes more a driving force of the infidelity than the actual act. So how do you feel about this? How do you feel about infidelity? Is it a deal breaker in your life? Have you been impacted by infidelity? Have you cheated or been cheated on? And I'm interested to know where this topic falls for you. And I join you to be part of the conversation. 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And we're talking about infidelity in light of the hacking of the Ashley Madison website, which advertises itself as a married dating service. So let's talk about the marital contract, because in order to understand infidelity or cheating, you have to understand what the marital contract is. Because I think for a lot of couples, you know, they would say, if you have an affair, the marriage is over. For some couples, they might have a little more openness. There are some couples that feel like they have an open relationship. So by taking the secretive part of the affair out, right, they almost give each other a hall pass. People have that kind of marital contract. So the first thing to understand in your relationship is, what is the marital contract you've made with your spouse? And if in that marital contract you've said, we will never cheat or you will never cheat, if an infidelity comes to light, then it's going to have, understandably, a huge impact on the sanctity of the relationship, but also what you understood to be the reality of your life. And, you know, according to those who have experienced cheating in their lives, the first thing, besides the shock of finding out, the first thing they experience is this kind of blowing up of their sense of reality. That the world as you knew it kind of comes undone when you find out there's been cheating or an infidelity in your relationship. And so you're already starting from this place where nothing about your life makes sense. And you have, in that moment, your first response is, I don't know this person that I'm with. You are a stranger to me, and you need to leave. You know, that desire to kind of close in. And so I think because of that instant devastation that happens when someone finds out there's been cheating, it's easy to immediately dismiss infidelity as a deal breaker and ending of all marriages. But on the other hand, for a lot of couples, infidelity ends up being the catalyst to a stronger relationship. That many marriages go through an incidence of infidelity or a period of time where there was cheating, and they come out with a stronger marriage on the other side. And so I think from a therapist's perspective, that makes this conversation challenging, because on this continuum of infidelity, on one hand is, you know, this horrible cheating, devastated, feeling victimized, feeling like your life is over experience. But on the other side is the potential for the marital relationship to actually be stronger. And so that's why I said it's important to look at the marital contract first. Are both parties living up to their part of their marital agreement prior to the infidelity? And again, not to excuse cheating, but there is a piece of infidelity or cheating that's connected to greater symptoms within the marriage itself. That generally speaking, people don't cheat if they're feeling like their needs are met at home. And generally, if you start to look deeply at the quality of the relationship prior to the cheating, there were things that were happening, a loss of intimacy, a loss of closeness, a loss of connection in that relationship prior to the affair. Now, having said that, are there people who sometimes are recreationally cheating? Yes. And so again, it goes back to knowing the contract of the relationship you had. Some people have a temperament towards cheating, and some people do not. So it's hard to just say from the beginning, oh, this person's going to be a cheater, or this relationship will last forever, we'll never have problems. So I think it's important to look at their relationship and say, what is the contract we have? How are things going in this relationship prior to the cheating? And what is my commitment long term to this relationship? So when we talk about infidelity, we're talking about the contract between the couple. We're talking about what happened. And then we're also talking about the cultural phenomenon of infidelity. And I think that's where the Ashley Madison website comes in. That I think one of the things that makes this conversation so difficult is because now we have a website, and it's not the only one, it's just the most well-known one at this point, but now we have a website that normalizes or tries to normalize infidelity as just a part of life. I mean, if their tagline is life is short, have an affair, Ashley Madison is less, it's also symptomatic of a greater cultural problem. And the greater cultural issue is that we have been telling people that the most important thing is their happiness. And that if you're not happy, you should go out and seek that happiness outside of the life that you're in. Or you may be happy in your relationship, but you could be happier, right? That's the message we get about everything. You might feel good about yourself and your hair and your makeup and your body, but you're always told that you could be happier, you could look better, you could do better. And so if you're in a relationship, you know, a committed long-term relationship, and you're kind of going along with the busyness of life with your work and raising children and, you know, mortgages and all the things that make our lives complex and beautiful when we're settled and committed, and then you continue to hear this noise of culture saying, but you could be happier, you deserve better, you could have more. That can start to play on us. And then you have things like Ashley Madison and these apps like Tinder that make it very convenient and easy to connect with other people. You start to believe that, well, if everyone's doing this, if 3.7 million people on the Ashley Madison site are doing this, then it must be a cultural norm. It must be something that's expected. And so it becomes easier to step out of that committed relationship and do something that you probably wouldn't have considered doing before. What else leads us to having an affair? What else leads us to putting our life on the line? One is the unhappiness or dissatisfaction in the relationship. Two can be this cultural noise saying you should have more, you deserve to be happier. There is something out there for you if you go look for it. And then the third, you know, issue with extramarital affairs is the sense of loss and longing. that it's interesting when you talk to people who've cheated, generally prior to that cheating incident, there is a period of time where they've had some sort of loss or trauma. Maybe a family member died, or a close friend, or a parent. Maybe they've had a health scare of some sort. Maybe they've lost a job. But there is this deep longing and loss that we're trying to fill. And if we feel we can't fill that within the marital relationship, there's something very enticing about an affair, an illicit relationship, a secretive relationship, an emotional connection with someone outside of our life, that sexual alchemy, feeling alive again, trying to awaken to that deadened peace in us. So it's not straightforward. Affairs, infidelity, relationships, marriage. What do you think about it? I mean, do you believe that all infidelity is wrong? Do you believe that places like Ashley Madison are providing a service of some sort to those who are out searching for more in our life? What do you think is the answer to marriages that have had problems with infidelity? 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I know this is something that might be difficult to call in and want to talk about. I understand that. So you're welcome to call and ask a question, as did Lily, who called in and said, if someone cheats once, are they likely to cheat again? So great question. It depends on the emotional maturity of the person who cheated. And I think that's the other piece of this. We have, you know, the commitment we make in our marital relationship, and then we have our temperament, and then we have our emotional maturity. And emotional maturity is another interesting thing in our culture, is that we don't really value that emotional maturity that goes along with making any sort of lifelong commitment in our culture. We don't really value adulthood in the way that we should. And there's something to being in a long-term relationship that demands emotional maturity. So if you're with someone who cheats once and they feel appropriately remorseful, that they do the work necessary to make amends with you, that they understand what drove the desire to cheat, right? What was the impetus? What was it drove the cheating behavior? If these things are understood, and if you feel safe, if that trust has been built again, people don't necessarily cheat again, but they have to find something greater than themselves to be committed to in order to really understand the pain that's caused by cheating. So I know that's not a direct answer, yes or no, because it really is an individual thing, because so many things go into the cheating behavior. But I say, Lily, the most important thing is the remorsefulness, the attempt to make amends, and also the emotional maturity that goes into understanding why did the cheating happen. So I appreciate that question. And also something we need to consider, and I keep making a list of things to consider about infidelity, is the idea of monogamy. Because a lot of people say, we're not meant to be monogamous. You know, relationships, marriage, it's obsolete because we can't really be monogamous anymore in our culture. My problem with that comment is, yes, it may be true that biologically we were not meant to be monogamous, that we are here biologically to procreate with as many people as we can. But we also are part of a civilized culture that we've bought into. And if you talk to people who've been in long-term committed relationships, they would not agree that monogamy is impossible. Actually, those in long-term committed relationships feel like being monogamous is part of their contract that they've made, along with any other vow that people make to a life of celibacy, maybe, or, you know, to any sort of committed path that may not be biologically in our makeup, but you rise above that with your commitment or your temperament, your emotional maturity. So the idea that, yes, we may not be biologically programmed for monogamy, but we do make a conscious choice to be monogamous, and that becomes part of the marital contract. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Jenny, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I took exception to one of your comments, Elizabeth, about your needs not being met at home, and I felt that that was contained some victim blaming.
Okay.
But then you kind of covered that, as in, are there people who are serial cheaters? And I think that that kingdom to conquer, but I think that there are serial cheaters. But I just wanted to share an experience I had. I've been married for 38 years, and it's working out so far, is what I tell people, and we kind of laugh. But before I was married, I had a long-term boyfriend, and about a year and a half into that, we were engaged. We weren't engaged at the time. He went out with someone else, and he lied about it. So I know that he was covering something up. But when I found out, the way you described it was perfect. I felt totally betrayed. I was so angry. But I continued to go out with him for about another year. And one day we were driving somewhere, and all of a sudden it hit me. I don't believe a word that comes out of your mouth. Mm-hmm. It was just this epiphany. And I thought, if you told me this guy was blue, I wouldn't believe you. And I thought, I can't be in a relationship where I can't believe a person. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize that my makeup is honesty, that's what I look for in someone. And if you cheat on me in any way, I can't believe you.
Well, and that trust really is the most difficult thing to regain, right? You might forgive someone for an infidelity, but that trust, that feeling in our heart that our well-being is being taken care of by another person, that's the big challenge in cheating, right? That's the biggest hurdle to overcome, is developing that trust again.
It is, absolutely. And then it's put back on you that you have to come up with this trust. And again, in a way, it's the victim that, if you want to call that person the victim, they're ending up having to figure out how to arrange their life, when if it hadn't happened in the first place, then I wouldn't have to go through this. And for me, I knew that was not something that I could deal with emotionally. So when I met my husband, I said, here's what happened in my last relationship, and if this happens, it's a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. So your talk about contract, what your contract is in your relationship, is so important.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, because of the way we approach marriage today, you know, well, not just today, but I think mostly today, there's a very casual feeling about marriage. And I don't think people understand the importance of premarital counseling and understanding that it is a contract that you're making. It's not just a glorified living together, right? you're making a contract. And I wanted to catch you while I had Jenny a little bit about this idea of victimizing the victim, about what's going on in the marriage, because that's what makes this conversation so difficult, because we do need to address, you know, when you marry someone, part of the contract is that I vow to help make your life and your journey the best life and journey possible, right? There's a part of us that is saying, I am going to be your partner and your witness on your journey. And so part of that is, if you're not feeling fulfilled or getting where you need to go, part of my job is to help you achieve that, because we both only have one journey down the road, right? And so I think that that's the tough part, is that if we're not feeling fulfilled or getting our needs met in our marriage, because it's very difficult for one other person to meet all of our needs, how do we do that if we say, I'm going to be married 38 years? You know, how do you write that contract so that you both feel like you're supported in your journey?
Well, you feel your needs aren't being met. And I think that's really difficult to do, and I think it's difficult for people to hear what needs aren't being met.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really, really hard one. I also think that premarital counseling is an important part of getting married. I her and her husband recently got married in the last couple of years, and she told me they got a book called 1,000 Things to Talk About Before They Got Married. And she even told me, she said, one day it hit me, I will never have sex with anybody else my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, that's true, Emily, because that's made up. Well, you never know about that. You can't really think about that. And she said, and I'll never flirt with anybody. And I said, oh, something I always say is, just because you've ordered doesn't mean you can't look at the menu. So you can still flirt with people. You can still talk to men in a friendly way. But it does mean that you have this contract with your husband that I don't do that. This is the end of our line. the fact that they have it together is important.
Yeah, and I think that what she's talked about, flirting, or, you know, how do we interact? I think that's another part of the marital contract, because I think for some couples the idea of flirting would be, you know, out of the contract. But I think the longer you're married, the more confident you become in your relationship, and the easier it is to feel comfortable saying, well, I can still flirt, or I can still look. But Jenny, I appreciate you taking the time to call in, because it is a broad subject, and I appreciate you mentioning the victimizing part. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Today we're talking about infidelity. Where do you stand on that? You know, is this something that's a deal breaker in your life? Do you have absolutely no room for that? Or are you someone who's had an experience with infidelity that actually made your life stronger? Because that's what I want to talk about the second half of the show, is that some people actually have found that after an infidelity in their marriage, they are stronger than ever before. And it can be possible. Healing is possible. And one of my fears is that we've become a culture that almost shames those who want to stay and make their marriage work. That we've become so quick to say if someone cheats, the relationship's over, that those who decide to stay and try to work it out sometimes are made to feel ashamed of that choice. So I'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3877. We'll be back to take your calls.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe, 6:30, and no one knows she'll be there.
That's music from Billy Paul, Me and Mrs. Jones. Throwback to the 70s, when we saw a real spike in sexual freedom and relationships and open marriages on the heels of the feminist movement. And so songs like this were not shocking, because that was becoming part of the cultural conversation. But today we're talking about infidelity in the modern era in light of apps or websites like Ashley Madison, or apps like Tinder, that make the availability of illicit experiences that much easier to get involved in. And I wanted to talk about, you know, a couple things. Have we normalized infidelity by having websites like this, or talking about, you know, it's everyone's right to feel good or be happy or to feel wanted? Are we doing a disservice to our relationships by trying to make the act of infidelity a normal expression? Or do we need to, in some way, rethink the way we look at infidelity? Maybe we need to look at the actual research of couples who've survived an affair and actually become stronger. And so in preparation, you know, I was doing a lot of reading and looking at talks by Esther Perel, who's considered one of the experts in our field when it comes to extramarital affairs, and also some work by Helen Fisher, who's a professor at Rutgers, who's done a lot of work the last 30 years studying love and desire and romantic relationships. And I think it's important to understand that because we're living such a long time, which is great, but it also means that if you get married at 20 or 25, you're going to be married for quite a long time. And within those years of being married, whether or not an affair occurs, most marriages will have two or three different incarnations. That you rarely marry someone and that marital relationship stays the same the entire length of your relationship. Because things happen. We grow and change, hopefully, as individuals. We emotionally mature. A trauma happens, a loss in the relationship, and you have to regroup and figure out who you are again. So in our culture today, you know, most people will have two or three long-term committed relationships, and most of them will have them with the same person, that person that they married first. A lot of people will go through a divorce, but the divorce rates really are declining. When you talk about people who are married, in married committed relationships, the divorce rate has actually declined in the last 20 or so years. So to be married 50 years or so, you're going to have to weather some storms and you're going to have to redefine what that relationship is. And fortunately or unfortunately, the result of an affair quite often is that opportunity to recreate what that marriage looks like. So I'm curious to know what you think about that. Do you think it's possible to have a stronger, better marriage after an affair or after infidelity? Or do you think that these couples are kind of going along, too afraid to leave? Because that's the other piece of it. You know, a lot of research shows that couples have weathered the storm, they're stronger, but then there is a cultural change or shift right now to shaming those who stay in relationships. Why would you stay with a cheater? He's only going to cheat again. There's more fish in the sea. There's other people out there. And we tend to minimize or forget that when a couple breaks up, it's not just their relationship that ends. That if there are children involved or even, you know, relatives, friends, the whole community is impacted by the end of the relationship. So to be so quick to say if, you know, a relationship goes south or someone cheats, just end it. And if you stay, you're being gullible. It is really to not understand what long-term commitment really looks like. So I invite you to be part of this conversation, 805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Ferret. And I understand that this can be a tricky conversation to have. And I appreciate a couple of calls that we've had with listeners that don't want to go on the air, and I understand. And I'll try to address your concerns. And so one of the questions was about, so if this marriage is a second marriage, what does that mean? If my marriage has struggled with an affair, how do I ever trust again? How do we get past feeling like my whole world has blown up? How long should it take? So those are the questions. How long will it take to get there? And unfortunately, that really has everything to do with the couple itself and with each person involved. So there's some things that happen after an affair comes to light. Quite often, the person who cheated has this strong sense of relief to be able to get it out and to be exposed, to have the secret exposed. If they, bottom line, have a strong commitment to their marriage, the affair itself at some point starts to weigh on them to become something that becomes more of an emotional drag. And if they are ready to be done with it, to come clean, for the person who cheated, quite often they feel like, now I've come clean, I feel better, I want to make amends, and I want to move forward and past it. The hard part is if you're the person who's just hearing about the affair at that moment and you weren't living through it for the last month or one time only or years, however long it lasted, you can't just get over it because the spouse that cheated comes clean. Because they've had time to think about it. They've had time to deal with the emotional fallout of the affair. But if you're just hearing it, you, rightfully so, are going to come undone. That you're not going to just say, oh, I appreciate your apology and I'm glad this will never happen again, so let's just move forward. So there's a period of time that the couple has to go into this kind of dark abyss. And they go into this dark abyss in different ways. A lot of anger, a lot of tears. Maybe you want to know details about what happened in the affair. Maybe, you know, there's a period of time that you need to separate and regroup to gather your resources. This can be anywhere between 3 months and a year before that initial kind of shock of what happened passes. And so there is no direct timeline between the initial marriage as you knew it ending because of the affair coming to light and this second marriage that we talk about, this stronger, more real marriage coming about. But the good news is if you're willing to go into that dark place, if you're willing to kind of let go of the shrapnel of what that original marriage was and to have these deeper, more meaningful conversations, that second marriage is stronger. And let me tell you why. Because quite often in marriages, when we've been with someone for a while, we start to ignore conversations that we know aren't going to go anywhere, right? Or we start to not have those conversations about things that we'd like to have be different because we don't want to shake things up, or we don't want our spouse to be uncomfortable. You know, we start to not have those really deep conversations. And so once we start having those conversations where we're vulnerable, where we expose our true feelings, when we start to close parts of ourselves off to our spouse, we start to lose the intimacy in the relationship. And it's that loss of intimacy that starts to make a relationship very vulnerable to infidelity. Because again, you know, statistics show that a lot of men cheat because they, you know, are looking for the sexual thrill, and they feel like they're being discounted in their marriage. They feel like they've lost their independence or a sense of freedom. They feel deadened in some way inside. But women also cheat for similar reasons: the lack of intimacy, loneliness, feeling alienated, feeling alone in the relationship, and also the sexual intimacy. But the thing that both men and women have in common is that we cheat because we feel like there is a deep sense of loss in this relationship. We feel deadened inside in some way. And part of the allure of the affair is feeling alive in some way, right? Feeling excited, feeling that youth and vitality that we had when we originally got married. And so it's easy to say as a therapist, well, just go find that in your relationship, you know, spark it up, light candles, go out on date nights. But if you've stopped having those really intimate conversations, those late at night pillow talks, or you've talked about things that you're afraid of, or you've talked about things in the marriage aren't going well, if you've stopped having those conversations, it's next to impossible to go on a date night and fix it. I mean, it's just it's not that easy. So part of the blowing up of that marriage as you knew it is the relief of having those vulnerabilities exposed again, to be able to cry together, be angry together, to talk about, you know, if a husband cheats and he says, I cheated because I wasn't getting my needs met, or I wasn't feeling excited, or I wasn't sexually aroused, then it's an opportunity for his wife to say, well, you're not the only one. I have needs and things I want to do and places in my life I'd like to go. And when you can tear down, kind of sometimes marriage can become a vault, or, you know, a castle with a moat around it, that we get so entrenched in our marriage the way it is, it's tough to think of it another way. And it takes something as devastating as an affair to crumble that moat and allow us to build something different. The thing that's so difficult is, again, I go back to the shaming, that we're in a culture that doesn't understand long-term commitment or a lifetime with another person. And quite often I'll ask my students in class, if you were married and your spouse cheated, or, you know, you're having trouble in the relationship, how long would you stay before you left? How long would things have to be bad before you would no longer want to stay and work it out, that you would file for divorce? Then a lot of times the first response usually is 6 months. I'd wait 6 months and then I'd be gone. And some people would say I'd wait a year or 2 years. Some people say I'd try for 3 years. And I say, you know, the interesting thing is you have to look at marriage from the back end and not the front end. If you're marrying someone and you've made a lifetime commitment to them, then you're saying, I'm going to be with you from now until I die. So that could be 60 years that we're together. So you need to look at this commitment at the 60-year mark. And when you look back at 60 years, if 40 of those years were phenomenal, would you put up with 20 years that weren't so great? Or if 50 years were wonderful, would you put up with 10 years that were terrible? You know, you have to look at the bigger picture to understand what you're willing to commit to get through a dark period of time in the relationship, to take the time to rebuild trust. So if you've had an affair and you've come clean and you're hoping that your spouse will stay with you, you have to understand that it could take 5 years to really build the trust. And during that 5 years, you're going to be going through ups and downs in that relationship of feeling really close again and excited, but then having times where your spouse is, I don't trust you right now, or I'm concerned that you're being secretive again. So you have to, when you make that long-term commitment, look at it at the 60-year mark and back up, and then decide, how much time am I willing to put into this relationship? And this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. A little surprised that I'm on this on my own. Lots of calls without people going on the air, but I'm surprised that so few of you are willing to come on and talk about this, because it's such a volatile issue that people feel very emotional about. And I'm curious to know what you think about infidelity. Is it a deal breaker? Is it something that we should just live with and accept? Is it part of how we spice up our lives? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of this conversation. And I got a call from someone who didn't leave their name. So the question was, when someone decides to cheat, it's like they are cheating on their family and community as well, not just their significant other. And this caller said that she survived infidelity with her husband, who cheated twice and has stayed with it. And I think, I don't know, that's a question as much as a statement. And it's very true that when we make the decision to cheat, when we make the decision to go on Ashley Madison, to have an illicit affair, we're not just impacting our significant other. Children are devastated by infidelity. Our community is devastated. And I guess it goes back to, what is it that would cause us to take such a chance in our lives? What is it that's missing in your life that would cause you to blow up your reputation? We have a lot of high-profile people in the world who've had affairs, you know, President Clinton and a lot of celebrities, and it's in the media. And so it starts to look like it's just something that happens that we need to accept or live with. So I'm wondering, you know, can we talk about infidelity in a way that it strengthens our relationships potentially? That if we can look at infidelity as a symptom of a culture that tells us we deserve more all the time, can we look at infidelity as a symptom of loss of intimacy in our relationship? Or is infidelity always going to be just about someone who cheats and the person who is cheated on? And are we always just a victim when an infidelity happens in our relationship? Charlie on the air, what's on your mind?
Yeah, anyway, I wanted to share some experience from of a family I was taking care of when I was up at Mather. Not in this area. There was this delightful older couple. They were like late 70s, early 80s, just really vibrant people. She had, I believe, I forget the tape. Anyway, she had some surgery. I'd taken care of her. And then she had a period of chemotherapy. There was a few months where she wasn't there. And then she came back. They both had an active sex life, which I think was very much responsible for their vigor. After she's recovered, the only reason I found out about it, he admitted that he'd strayed a little bit and wanted to make sure he hadn't picked up anything bad. I did some tests. I don't know whether he shared it with his wife, and it's not my business. And he came out fine. And they, this is like 11 years of my, this was not around, this is in the Sacramento area. I think it was healthy for both of them. He was able to meet his needs and then resume their active life.
Well, I think that's a great point, Charlie, because that's the conversation that's difficult to have. If you've been with someone for 30, 40 years and you've had this vibrant, vital relationship together, and something happens to one of the spouses, you know, can cheating or having a relationship outside of the relationship itself actually help? And I think it goes back to the marital contract. You know, and my assumption is that this couple had some sort of marital contract that he wasn't going to come home and tell her about it, but that he knew that the trust and the intimacy in that relationship was strong enough that this was something that was not going to hurt the actual relationship. And I think that's another important piece, is that we have to understand our relationship with our spouse, that the trust in each other is primary, and that if the incident, you know, if cheating or any activity outside of the marriage is going to happen, to maintain the trust really has to be the primary concern. How do we stay connected even when I'm feeling like I need to stray? And when you start to have those wandering feelings of I feel like I need to stray, we have to have the emotional maturity to look at what is this about? Is it just my temperament? Is it just me? Or is something going on that needs to be addressed? And Charlie, I thank you for taking the time to call. Anne, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm the cheater, and I have to thank you for your show and shedding light. I was wondering the factors that go into it, like why someone chooses to cheat. But at the time that I made that decision, I had to say to myself, I have nothing to lose. And he was working a lot, and I was busy with the children, and it was kind of like the seven-year itch. But today it's been over 15 years, and I still feel remorse and guilt, and I still have, like, loving feelings towards him. So I would like to see more people reconcile, actually.
Well, and did you stay with your husband, or did that relationship end?
No, we ended up getting divorced.
And so was that a relief for you? Or do you regret that? I guess that's part of my understanding. What you miss is the marriage, or you miss the affair?
I miss the marriage, yes, and I do regret the divorce. I wish we could have worked it out, actually.
And is there a way that it could have been worked out? Do you think there was some help you could have received? Did you get support from your friends and community?
Probably. We stayed together for a while after the affair was known, but then I just felt like we had grown apart, but we didn't end up doing counseling. I did counseling kind of on my own, but he wasn't that interested, so we kind of grew apart.
So do you think that counseling together might have helped?
I think it could have if he was open to it, but I think he might have just been too hurt.
Yeah, and it's difficult, isn't it, to...
Yeah.
If you're the person who wants to work it out and the other person feels wounded, it's difficult to go back. So what did you take from this experience, you know, as a mom? What is it you wanted to pass on to your children? I mean, not that you would talk about that, but about marriage itself. Do you believe you can be married for 50, 60 years?
I would like to believe that you can. I still have the old-fashioned idea of marriage once and forever. And he is now remarried with a new family, so I wish him well. But the funny thing is, like, for the past 3 months or so, he's been in my dreams, like, every night.
That connection doesn't go away, does it?
No, it doesn't.
So how do you forgive yourself? How do you move forward from that place?
I'm remarried now. I think I just have to kind of meditate on it, like you said, and try to find the good and the reasons and to be able to pass on some wisdom to others who might be there. But like you said, we got married young and we had the family young and we were both really busy. And I just felt my needs weren't taken care of and the opportunity arose. But today, I still feel remorse. I don't know if it's guilt, but I feel remorse that for that action and for where it led us.
And I appreciate your honesty. And I think from a therapeutic perspective, it makes me sad that we don't really make space for healing when it comes to relationships and marriages. I really do think that the norm is to have the relationship end. And I wonder how powerful it would be if your community had come together and said, okay, this happened. We support you. You two need to work this out. You know, I wonder how different the energy would be if that's what we saw in the media. It's like, you know what? Things happen, bad things happen, but the marriage itself, that contract is the overriding, more important thing, instead of this idea that, you know, well, if someone cheats, there's always someone else to get married to.
Right. I think more people should work it out, like you said, and look into counseling and look into forgiveness and healing, because I think it's just kind of like a fork in the road that you can come back together and you can be stronger. I do believe that now.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you for taking the time to call. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. Susan, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi there. I never thought cheating was really a deal breaker necessarily. Mm-hmm. All of the deceit and all that stuff that goes around it is far more disturbing to me than the actual sex act. Mm-hmm. And I felt that way partly because I read some statistical information regarding men and how often they think about sex. And it was so overwhelming, I didn't know that they could ever, you know, necessarily keep it in their pants. But aside from that, you know, I think it's nice if you do make those promises. Although, in my experience, that hasn't really been mostly what people, you know, what happened to people. My marriage vow was that I would stay as long as everyone was happy. Mm-hmm. And it came to pass that I had to fight for some autonomy. And so when we went to the therapist, they were talking about those date nights, and all I wanted was some time alone, which, you know, my husband couldn't quite understand why I would need such a thing. And then he came in, took over my business, so there was all kinds of parenting and stuff. But aside from that, I was looking for autonomy. I was looking for the opposite thing, which destroyed our relationship.
Oh, I'm sorry. There you are.
Not necessarily sexual, but other relationships.
Well, and I think, you know, as I said at the top of the show, infidelity, marriages, relationships, they're very nuanced and very complex. And so that marital contract, right, where we're both expecting from the marriage, I think is a conversation we needed to have better with each other. Because I think if you had been able to say to your husband, hey, we're in this as partners for life, we both get one journey on the planet, right, for however long we're here. And so my job is to help make your journey the best it can be. And your job is to help me make my journey the best. And if some autonomy is important, then it has nothing to do with how much I love you. It has everything to do with you supporting me. And I think those conversations become difficult to have, because I think there's a lot of fear that goes into the idea of needing time away or wanting the rules of the relationship to be different. And men specifically, unfortunately, have a much more difficult time with transition and change than women do. Men are much more likely to get married and kind of settle in, which is ironic, because it's the settling in and the intimacy that starts to become routine that causes them to start looking for novelty. So it's almost like we watch what we wish for, we get it, and then all of a sudden we start mourning the novelty.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you, Susan. And Sue, you get the last call today. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is, when I got married, I've been divorced 20 years. I thought that I married somebody to be complete. Mm-hmm. And that was my problem. Because I think you have to be complete, and that's what makes a good marriage. And our society today is addicted to love, and even music and everything. They don't really tell the truth about it. So that's my comment.
Thank you, Sue. And I think that is a dilemma, you know, this idea of when we do marry someone. If you get married young, in your 20s or sometimes even in your 30s, our level of emotional maturity has to develop throughout the years that we're with a partner. I think it's a lot to ask someone to be complete unto themselves when we marry, because just from my own experience, I feel like each decade I've come to a wholeness of myself that's completely different than it was 10 years before. But I've been fortunate enough that my husband and I have kind of grown and matured in similar ways throughout our life. And we consistently are reworking that marital vow. We almost every year anniversary kind of talk about where are we at, state of the union, you know, how are things going? How are you feeling, you know, especially as we get older and our kids have moved out. It's like, how do we rebuild? We're on marriage number 3 together. I think number 3, he might say number 4, but of that redefining who we are. And so I think that it's about the conversation. It's about the understanding of the long haul when we marry someone. And it's also understanding that our temperaments are different, that some people might not have it in them to make it for the long haul. And that's important to understand. But I think the message from today, and Sue, I appreciate you taking the time to call. I think overall the message today is about the conversation, about infidelity, about talking about those things that we keep secret. If you have secret desires, if you have secret fantasies, if you're afraid to talk about them with your husband, write them down, you know, or your wife, write them down, send them in a letter, send them in a card. These things are going on for me, you know, to try to take what is secret and bring it to light is how we kind of deal with or combat infidelity. But if infidelity does happen, if it is part of your story, you can own this story. It doesn't have to be the end of your marriage. You know, do your reading. Read some of the work of Esther Perel or John Gottman. There are great professionals out there who understand the sanctity of a long-term commitment and can help you as a pair redefine and recreate marriage number 2 and marriage number 3. You know, some of the fun and excitement of long-term marriage is not only that you have history together, but it can be fun to get married again in different ways. There's something freeing about letting go of the shackles of your marriage the way you defined it when you were first married and being a brand new couple in a new way, but together. And it's just something to think about because it's a complex world we live in, and our emotional lives and our personal lives are complex things. And this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Please join me on my Facebook page or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And we go out today with a song about staying together by Dave Matthews.
Funny how time slips away. Looking at the cracks creeping across my face. I remember the little kid living in here. He'll be living here probably till I'm dead. Please don't leave me, baby. Please don't leave me.